Hello, this is Aaron, and welcome back to the show. I'm delighted today to have a very special guest, John Lovell. John is the author of the new book, The Warrior Poet Way, A Guide to Living Free and Dying Well. John, I think you have a hard copy of it. You can maybe hold up to the camera here so people can see what it looks like.
Yeah,
I read the ebook versions never look as good if you hold the Kindle up to the screen. He's also got a YouTube channel called The Warrior Poet Society. I put links to both of those in the show notes. He's also a former Army Ranger and combat veteran, and also a former full-time Christian missionary, which is very interesting. John, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Aaron. Good to be here.
When you went into the Army, did you go in with the idea of becoming a Ranger?
Yes, I was going, I wanted to be the special operations ninja kind of thing. So yeah, I was trying to get to Ranger Battalion.
What made you decide to do it? What drew you to wanting to be part of an elite combat unit?
I think every little boy dreams of it. That piece of me never really grew up. And I'd pushed myself to utter limits through wrestling and cutting weight and contending, fighting against other dudes, and realizing I could do something a little bit more challenging than perhaps the common bear was willing to subject themselves to, and perhaps I would make it. And so it's through early striving, particularly through the combat of wrestling, that really gave me the push to give it a go.
You obviously know what it means to be a warrior if you were in the Rangers. What did you learn about being a man from your time in the Rangers?
All the attributes of a warrior that have to teach a man about masculinity, and all those values of the warrior, which help carry us forward to do well in life. And so the attributes of a warrior that are important are long-suffering, grit, perseverance, courage, calm under fire and pressure, the ability to sacrifice for others and for a cause greater than yourself, tenacity, being dangerous, being aggressive, all those attributes of a warrior, which aren't just attributes for a warrior. They're really attributes all men should hold in some degree.
Yeah. So you sort of almost answered my question. You were in like Afghanistan, I believe, which had to be an incredible experience.
Right. I did a few tours, four tours to Afghanistan. I did one to Iraq.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's serious stuff. I think a lot of guys hear warrior and they don't think of themselves as, I'm not in the military, I'm not a cop, I'm not in a direct sort of combat situation today. Should people think about what it means to be a warrior as a man in sort of the workaday world that most of us inhabit?
I think your identity and who you are shouldn't be formed by necessarily the external environment around you. It should be some type of value that it's imputed into your character. And so it's not your circumstances around you that all of a sudden make you warrior or warrior-like or capacity to be a warrior. You need to already have those characteristics. So if things went sideways around you, a warrior can step forward, perhaps unproven in battle, but a warrior still the same, ready to meet challenges. So every dude is called to be a protector and provider of their family, a protector, right? God himself calls himself a protector of the innocent. Mm-hmm. He calls himself a mighty man of war. He says, I am a warrior. And then he tells us to be like him.
Yeah, I think there is a sense in which we can apply the warrior motif in a lot of domains. So I'm essentially at war, if you will, contesting in the public arena of ideas. But there's also the sense that I think as a man, you can't escape the physical at the end of the day. Sometimes if somebody tries breaking into our house at night, you know, I have to respond to that. I don't get to say, well, I'm just a keyboard warrior.
That's right.
It gets real quickly. You know, and as we see from the news, you know, we think that, you know, we've kind of gotten into a, you know, post-violent sort of society here in the West, but it isn't always like that.
Right. Yeah. I think if you really love your family and you are tasked in your role to be protector, leader, provider, well, that protector may come down to a physical altercation. And so if it is real love at all, is ready to protect. And so we similarly should be ready to protect. Now, perhaps because of your job and lifestyle, you don't have lats growing out of your ears and you can't deadlift 400 pounds. Well, I submit firearms are a real good equalizer to the battlefield there. So you could be able to protect and with easier technology than those of our forefathers before us. So it's kind of like with the access to firearms, man, you could have a pretty good leg up in the warrior world if you just put a little bit of effort in. So I think all of us are called in whatever capacity we're able to be protectors of our family. And that also extends to the physical realm.
A lot of men are very conflict averse. We don't like conflict. I mean, I know I'm someone who struggled with this, honestly, in life. I mean, like, I would just ignore problems at home because I didn't want to have difficult conversations with people. Maybe it's things I don't like with my boss or things going on. It's just so much easier sometimes to turn aside from conflict and sort of hide out from it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't do that when you're in the Rangers. You can't always do that in life. You know, I've been able to improve on this. I've made a conscious effort on this. But for men who are, you know, afraid of engaging in conflict, do you have any suggestions for like how to overcome that?
Yeah, I get it. I don't like people hating me. And it just so happens I've got a lot of people that love me and I got a ton of people that just absolutely hate me. Thousands of people hate me, given that I'm standing for something in the public arena. So I know I viscerally feel that. I experientially understand your revulsion to that conflict as well, you listeners. However, it's no excuse for us to be guilty of the crime and sin of passivity. That's the sin of Adam, to sit by and allow things to happen and to not rise up and not exercise sovereignty and leadership because we are passively allowing things to happen before us. It's not just the soldier who is supposed to be active against enemies. It's us engaged in a war that's far beyond just flesh and blood. And so, yeah, you can't possibly be passive and be a successful man. The Bible says the righteous are as bold as lions. And so if you're not as bold as a lion, you're simply not righteous. You're simply nothing like Jesus.
What do you mean by the poet? I think the warrior is a little more obvious, particularly with your military background. What's the poet?
This is an area of like, warrior was a struggle up for me. It's not like I came out of the womb wearing multicam and my face painted, you know, of like, man, I really struggled truly with mastering fear and doing all kinds of stuff. And still, even to this day, I feel that weight of fear where I'd rather just cower and I don't want to run toward things that are difficult and I would rather be comfortable and safe. And so every single day with new challenges, I have to put on that warrior cap. But poet as well, it's either as important or it's more important. I haven't figured it out yet, but I will say I'm not naturally as predisposed to being a poet as I am a warrior. All of us have a predisposition, whether we're a little bit more lion or less lamb, or maybe we're a little bit more lamb and less lion. It is woefully inadequate for us to camp out in our area of comfort. We are called to be both lions and lambs. That's what we're called to be. Just like Jesus in Revelation 5, he is the lion of the tribe of Judah, and he is the lamb looking as one who has been slain. And so we are called to be like him in characteristic, both the commander of the army, armies of the Lord, which he is, and also the sacrifice for our sins. And so I recognize you should not be a lover or a fighter. You are supposed to be, as a man, you're supposed to be both and. So when I say poet, what I'm looking after is all the attributes of a poet. I already listed the kind of archetypical values of a warrior. Let me enumerate some of the poet aspects. This is the romantic. This is the one who feels love deeply. This is the one who can connect with his family on a deeper level. The warrior's good at keeping them safe, but it's not good at keeping a family together. How do you be emotionally available for kids and to be able to be gentle? It's also going in toward all of our freedoms and the enjoyment thereof. It's enjoying and engaging in the arts. It's being swept away by awe-inspiring beauty. Our founders of the United States penned our Bill of Rights to protect us from an infringing government. The First Amendment was the freedom of religion and speech, the freedom of press, the freedom of assembly. They packed all the good stuff, the poet aspects, the freedoms to enjoy, to drink deeply of the well of life. And they packed it into the First Amendment. That's the poet stuff. The Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. And it's because they understood the only way to possibly keep the poet stuff, the freedoms, which are a means to an end, is to have a well-armed populace that could defend it. Ultimately, freedom is only gained and kept at the muzzle of a gun. Now, a lot of folks don't like that, but it's just a historical fact. It just is in this weird world of evil and tyranny. And so they put, I'm not trying to proselytize everyone to the Second Amendment, or perhaps I am, but that would be an ancillary point. The point is the Second Amendment exists to protect the First Amendment. And so the warrior protects the poet, but whereas the warrior is a means to an end, the First Amendment is an end in and of itself.
Mm. Knowing that you were from a Christian background and reading about this warrior poet motif, I said to myself, this sounds a lot like King David. Was King David an inspiration for you thinking about this warrior poet concept?
Unquestionably. I mean, it's remarkable. He was truly a warrior poet, and most of the Psalms of the Bible are accredited to King David. So he was also a musician. So musician, poet, and he's also described as quite possibly the Bible's greatest warrior. I don't think it's an accident that both warrior and poet coming together in David to create a man after God's own heart, because that's what God is, a warrior poet.
He was a great dancer, too.
Yes, he did. He'd become more undignified than this and humiliated in his own eyes, correct? Yeah.
The warrior poet seems, you know, kind of similar to other dualisms like yin and yang or chaos and order. And it's not like good and evil, where one's good and the other's bad. These are things you need to have both of.
Correct.
How do you get the balance right?
You don't balance at all. It's not a 50-50 proposition like a yin and a yang, which I have a real big philosophical problem with that duality, that dichotomy as well. This is supposed to be something you're 100% of.
Hmm.
You know, you're supposed to be 100% warrior and 100% poet all at the same time. And so you see the situations around us call out those things that we are. It's not like a man goes off to war and doesn't bring him his whole self with heart, mind, soul, and body marches off to war. The whole man is caught up in that warrior aspect, And when you make love to your wife, you bring every bit of who you are into that union. And so it's not an either or proposition. You're supposed to be fully both.
I'd love to hear more of your take on the yin and yang and why you don't like it.
So one is, it suggests that good and evil are a 50-50 proposition and somewhat of a zero-sum game. It's as if good cannot exist without the evil, when really evil is not a thing in and of itself. Rather, it's a perversion of the good. So just like darkness isn't an ontological thing, it's just the absence of light, as cold is an opposite to heat, it's just the absence of heat. That's a very quick flyover of one philosophical problem I have against that cosmic dualism.
The other person who uses some of these is Jordan Peterson. He talks about chaos and order. I'm curious what your take on Jordan Peterson is.
I haven't met Jordan yet personally. I'd like to. But I think he is doing a great amount of good for a lot of people and men out there.
You also use this strong versus smart equation in the book, which again made me think of Achilles and Odysseus. Mm. You know, not that either of them were dumb or either of them were not strong, but you know, Achilles was more the let's go kill him right now, and Odysseus was more the trickster in some respects. How do you How do you think men need to deploy these types of strategies or these types of ways to operate in the world? Is it another 100-100 sort of thing, or is this one a little different?
I would say of like, though I'll concede Odysseus was, it was his cleverness, which was also oftentimes saving his hide. He was also readily able to tap into deep wells of warrior, not as good as Achilles, but mind you, I think Odysseus, would have full warrior and full poet, and he's got smart and strong at his disposal, as well as Achilles. You can't be that level of soldier without an extremely high level of intellect. You literally have an IQ test in the military, and you have to get a certain level of scoring for you to make it into special operations. There, now we have a joke within Ranger Battalion. There's smart Rangers and there's strong Rangers. And it's like, which one are you, smart Ranger or strong Ranger? And it's our fun way of calling the really strong Rangers idiots. And so I get that in the book, but I was letting you in a little bit of a fun joke for us Rangers to do at the expense. Now, the takeaway from that is you don't want to just dumb brute your way through life. It's not good enough to just try really hard. You want to play a smart game too. Let's be innocent as doves, but as shrewd as serpents is the call. So you were given a brain for you to use it. You should use it. You should make good plans, not just think working really hard is going to make the difference. You can work really hard on your marriage, but if you don't make if you don't make huge strides to really look at this odd species of woman in front of you and figure out how in the world you're supposed to communicate with this strange creature, you are not going to do well. You can try hard, but you're going to try hard in a masculine way that can't really meet the female on her own ground. And so she has to reach the same way. She has got to meet me as a man and understand I cannot be a woman. I can only be a man, and you can only be a woman. And so in that, we both start to understand the other one and meet each other as best we can on each other's footing. And so similarly, you got to be clever about how you go through life. It matters greatly, your philosophy and your theology. Let's get smart as well. Let's be warrior scholars so we might do well in life and death.
Yeah, I take it you were the smart Ranger.
I was not. So I'm not a huge guy. I'm the typical special operations size, which is about 5'9", 170. That's your average. Mm-hmm. But then you have some of these like just huge dudes, just massive. It's like you don't need explosive, ballistic, or mechanical breaching options with these guys. You could just be like, Ranger, smash. And you point through and they'll just Hulk smash through a wall. I'm like, alternate breach, stack on me, let's move. And so there are some guys that are just really, really big dudes, and you're glad to have it. So
you had a chapter that said you should learn to dance. What do you mean by that?
Dance is a move through life of all of a sudden I'm making a certain plan. And to keep this even in a military context, you make good plans to be able to hit the enemy where it hurts and have your emergency plans, contingency, backup plans, all that stuff. You're guarding your flanks. You're trying to be smart about this, but this is a rule of war. As soon as you hit the ground on your objective, everything's going to go sideways and the plan's going to change. You're going to need to move with that. You're going to need to adjust on the fly. Similarly, as you go throughout life, you're going to have to adjust on the fly. You're going to have to move with it. You're going to have to dance with it. So I do mean learn to dance in a metaphorical sense. However, I also mean it in a physical sense. I think men have ceded the arts in anything that looks like romance or dancing and really given it up as kind of sissy stuff. And it's a shame, and it's incongruent with all of history, because we know our ancient empires of Greece, who you already mentioned a couple of great Grecian warriors, and Rome and Mesopotamia and Egypt. And what do we really know of them? The main thing that clues in is we see their art. We see what they left behind inscribed in the rock by men who engaged in the arts. And so we need to, it is a masculine, hardy endeavor to engage in the arts. And I think dancing is fun, and it allows you to romantically connect with your bride. And that's a good thing, both physically in a literal sense, but also in a metaphorical sense. Shake things up, guys. Pursue your bride. She wants to dance. So be there for her. But there's life application there as I go further into in my book.
I love things like Learn to Dance that operate at multiple levels. So if you're struggling to know how to put something into practice metaphorically, you could also just take it like in the kind of naive view. I'm going to physically learn how to dance. I'm going to learn that skill. I can do that. And then you can go for there. Yeah, you're right. It also reminds me of things. If you watch old Hollywood movies, you'll see like groups of men singing together. And like men don't sing together these days. There's a lot of things men used to do that we don't do. We've sort of lost, I think, some of the things that people would have done. In Greece, in art, being an artist or a sculptor or a poet may have made you, very manly. It was a manly endeavor. It wasn't like, something that sissies did.
Right.
And, these guys like fought at the Battle of Marathon. They fought in these things. Socrates was in the army.
Yes,
Aeschylus was in the army. These guys were not wimps sitting around talking about ideas. These guys were ready to get in there and, put their lives on the line.
Right. Yep.
How would you apply the idea, the warrior poet idea, to marriage and your marriage to your wife?
Sure. So whatever, I think a woman wants to feel protected and she wants to be provided for. She also wants us to be leaders. She wants us to be strong and principled and passionate. And that kind of stuff really, it excites a woman, and it's what she really yearns for. It's baked into the cake. It's built into her DNA. They want us to have that warrior aspect. The malfunctioning aspect of this is when you see kind of the bad boy who's got these virtues, but on a malfunctioning scale. They're leading, but they're leading in the wrong direction. They're bold, but in the wrong direction. They're strong, but they don't use their strength for good. Well, they'll still see the husk of those things they're attracted to. And you're like, why does the girl go after the bad guy? I'm like, because at least he's leading, albeit in the wrong direction.
Right.
Now, when you can take those things that she really yearns for and point them in the right direction, it becomes really, really explosive. I say there's something in the warrior ethos that a woman is programmed to go after. It's deep down, even if she wouldn't readily admit it, she does deep down yearn for it. And so I think that aspect is important. It changes who you are. Now, the poet aspect, I need not lecture anyone on, because all of us know that we should be sensitive and open and funny and available and talk about feeling. But I mean, culture tells us that readily of like culture is so keen on this. They're ready for us to actually become females ourselves. And so I wouldn't surprise anyone right there when I talk about, be nice.
Right. I think a lot of guys, fatal flaws, they're way too much on the poet side. They don't have any warrior side, when it comes to women, because they've heard these things that they're, read online or wherever, and they were told, and they just keep doubling down on poet, and they don't integrate the other aspects of who they are as a man.
It's good. I would have one caveat to that observation, though. I'd say, though they're majoring on poet, it's not poet as it should be, because both warrior and poet both should be imbued with great amounts of courage. A poet that's not courageous is a sophist. They're just using lots of words, but it takes bold daring to actually seek out the truth and tell it in an interesting way. And so what happens when you're too passive or too scared to actually say the truth and pursue it and exercise different mediums at your disposal to promulgate that truth? Now we live in an age where we are terrified of our shadows and we won't speak plain truth. We won't say things like, hey, men cannot become women. Can't do that. It's not okay to just exercise sexuality in any old way that depravity may suit you. That's not okay. Yet a lot of us, thinking that we're being poetic, aren't actually doing the job of real truth seekers and tellers, which falls under that poet category for me. So I'll say, though we have characteristics of the poet, we're falling far short of what I'm actually defining as a real poet.
I want to ask you about something that's not in the book, but it's related to my work.
Sure.
It's long been known that men don't go to church as much as women. Although that's changing, not because men are coming to church, but because even fewer women are coming to church. There's even a book that was kind of got a lot of press a few years ago called Why Men Hate Going to Church. And there is this sense that men aren't interested in religion, men aren't interested in Christianity, you know, men aren't interested in all this guidance from authority figures like pastors. And yet we've seen over the last decade an explosion in online men's influencers. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them are healthy people, like maybe Jocko Willink, you know, or Jordan Peterson and some of those. And it goes all the way over to the pickup artists and the Andrew Tates. And a lot of these guys have millions and millions of followers. Very few of them are Christian. You are one of the few, I think, that's actually a sort of out and proud Christian who's also, you know, an influencer who's got over a million subscribers on your YouTube channel. So you got a lot of guys tuning in to what you have to say. I got a lot of pastors who listen to this and they want to reach men. What would you tell the church to do differently, or what does it need to start doing to reach men effectively? Because there seems to be some disconnect between the success of the influencers and the lack of success in the church.
First off, I would just concede your overall point, but also say there's some churches that are reaching predominantly men, young men, and doing extremely well. Their congregation are mostly young, energetic, passionate men. But to capture those young, vibrant men, they want to follow masculine men. They want to follow warriors as well. My wife and I moved a couple years ago to a new area, and I went church shopping. Of like, I was online, I was pouring over online sermons, and we go visit a new church every Sunday. Pretty exhausting, but I needed to follow a pastor that was masculine, that was a leader. Typically, it was just as simple for me to wade through the chaff, and I would say, "How did your church respond to COVID in its second year?" And that was all I needed to know. How did you do when the jig was up in year two and we realize everyone's nose is hanging out the top of our masks and whatnot, and we realize exactly what in the world's going on. You know, you have your personal preferences, but how much did you kowtow to the government mandates and censorship? Did you stay shut down? Or did you tell government to pound sand and say, no, we are not going to give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing? I think that's in Hebrews. So yeah, of like, no, we're literally called to assemble together physically in person. And if you weren't awake in year two of year one, maybe I'd give you some slack, but this is, I'm not actually putting a prerogative out for everyone listening in. I'm just saying, hey, this was my personal litmus test of how I went about it. If in year two, when we were, when I was church shopping here, we were kind of ending year two. If everyone's still like masked up on stage, I'm like, you guys, bunch of cowards. You're not afraid of catching the virus anymore. The virus had run its course by the end of 2 years. And if you were really sick or you were at risk or something, yeah, you can stay home, listen online. But at that point, what I realized is it wasn't that they were afraid of the virus. I'd walk through an airport and everyone's nose is hanging out.
Right.
And nobody's, you know, sterilizing. And it's really just we're afraid of each other. We're afraid of man. It's not that you're afraid of the virus, it's that you're afraid of man. And if you were honest, you realize that was you too. And so I'm like, how much fear of man do we have in this congregation? And so I wanted to follow bold leadership. And so some folks listening in were like, well, I don't like that. I'm like, well, good. It's not your decision. This was my own personal litmus test because I know something about who I would and wouldn't follow. And so you'd be like, well, I don't agree with that. I'm like, that's great. You do you, bro. I wouldn't follow your pastorship. I wouldn't follow you right there.
Well, I completely agree with you. You know, when the pandemic first hit, hey, there's a lot of uncertainty. We don't know what's going on. Maybe err on the side of caution. But certainly by year two, you know, you should have figured something out. And there were profound consequences to institutions. There was a big resortation of people. The churches that stayed shut down for those two plus years, They lost a lot of people. The ones that stayed open gained people like crazy. And we saw that at every institution. It happened with schools. It happened with states when everybody started moving down to Florida because Ron DeSantis said, we're not going to shut down Florida. People voted with their feet in favor of that kind of strong leadership.
Yeah. Well, I see some pastors will do a lot of fancy footwork to spend 50 minutes saying almost nothing. Mm. They're just cowards up there, spineless cowards in pulpits all across America. Now, I think women will be more accepting of that. They'll more readily follow, but real men won't. Real men are not going to follow you and will sense immediately whether you're a coward or not. And men don't follow cowards. I won't. And so that's what you want the men back. Stop being a coward. Say the truth and leave the results. You know, the kingdom of heaven and the gospel invitation is an offensive revolving door. You lay it out there, leave the results to God, and people are going to get saved. And then people are going to be repulsed and go away. Jesus would preach a sermon, huge groups come in. Then he would keep talking, say something offensive, and everybody would leave him. Right. He was not afraid to gain a crowd and lose a crowd. And so we need to be just like Jesus, not that we're being rude or brash or mean or anything like that. We just tell the truth, peace if possible, but the truth at all costs. We're ambassadors of the truth. You're supposed to tell the truth. Here is what God said. Here is the mail. Yes, it's a political issue. Somehow murdering babies in the womb to a million a year in the U.S. has somehow become a political issue. But really, it's not. Stop murdering babies. And if you're afraid to say that from the pulpit, then there's why you don't have men in your congregation. It's because you're a coward. Don't get mad at me. Use that energy to repent and be braver.
So people should be bolder about clearly speaking truth.
It's the sole job of a minister. It's his home. It is his, if you don't do that, you have lost the biggest piece of what your whole job is. It's to refuse to have removed the offense of the gospel. And so that on its face, now it's not to talk about COVID or something like that I'm saying before it. No, it's a bold gospel. Ephesians 6, pray for us also that we may boldly declare your gospel as it ought to be done. That's the job. That's the whole job. And so if you're too cowardly to straighten your spine, stand up and tell your congregation that sin is sin and God will have no part of it. Repent. The kingdom of God is at hand. You're a coward. You don't belong in the pulpit. And that's why you don't have men in your congregations.
I think in our society in general, people are just hungry for courage. They're looking for people who will show that leadership. And you know, I think that was one of the things that drew people to Jordan Peterson. He's like, I'm not going to obey this pronoun law. That was one. And then when he went on TV, you know, he's like, here's the truth. I'm not going to back down under hostile questioning. And, you know, why can't pastors do something like that?
Gospel truth? Some do. I know some fiery pastors that they love deeper than anyone I know. They're kind-hearted. They're gentle. But they don't shy away from telling the truth. And that's what people need. They need the truth. And they're going to be offended by it. And they're going to hate you by it. And many will leave and many will stay and get saved. And their lives will be transformed. But don't you dare blunt the blow of truth. It's got to be done. It is the gospel.
I want to bring us to a close here, but I got a couple more questions. The first is your site, people can probably gather from some of the things you said before, has a significant orientation around 2A firearm stuff. Do you think every man should own a gun?
I wouldn't put that on everybody, but I mean, I'd like you to. I think it's if you're an American, it's kind of baked into the cake of our DNA. It's our Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Our founders recognized it was essential to safeguarding liberty. So I'd just say, do you love your country? Do you like seeing it slip away? The Second Amendment is the fail-safe of the dying republic. And so if you're a freedom lover, do you love your family? Are you worried about people breaking in or doing something? May never happen, but what if it did? Mm-hmm. Do you know enough kung fu to take three dudes in the middle of the night? And if not, consider a gun. And so, yeah, you're supposed to be a protector of the innocent. Some folks will erroneously say, turn the other cheek. Nope. Terrible context fail there. Somebody doesn't like you, pushes you, smacks you around in the face. Your life's not in danger or anything. Mm-hmm. They're just insulting you. They are belittling you. They're doing something. Now, there's that category, in which case I hope I would have the strength of character to turn the other cheek and to not escalate and pound this person into a submission. That would be a temptation for me because I have a lot of those skill sets. But would I be able to turn the cheek in that scenario, as I think I should? Now, if somebody breaks into my house to rape and kill my family, you turn the other cheek. That is a super sick, twisted, evil thing. No, protect, man. Mm-hmm. Protect. And so it's a completely different context. So don't weasel your way out of your area of responsibility by inciting ridiculously bad theology.
And if there are men out there listening, if there are men out there listening who don't own a gun, would like to get one, do you have any recommendations for what to start with? Like what type of gun, if you don't want to give a specific model? Just what's the best entry point?
Can you pause just a moment? I just picked one up. Picked one up. You'll be the first to see it. You just got to hang on for a second.
Okay, great. We could do that. You can definitely get that. Absolutely. So while he's getting what he's going to show us, I want to let you know again, it's John Lovell, and the book is The Warrior Poet Way, and I put the link to buy it in the show notes, and now if you're on YouTube, he's given us a demonstration of what he's got.
Oh, here it is. I just picked this girl up. This is a 12-gauge shotgun with a flamethrower attached to the bottom.
Oh, that's amazing.
So maybe you just caught me in an excuse to do a very fun show and tell. You should all get this gun, 12-gauge shotgun. I don't know whether this is a 30-round magazine and a flamethrower attached to the bottom. Why? Because America. No, I'm teasing. There's a lot of different directions to go, but I'd prefer that you had at least a pistol that you could use for concealed carry. I usually is like a good intro pistol, push people toward a Glock 48 or a Glock 43X or a Glock 19. The first two I mentioned are smaller and easier to carry. And then I'd like you to get an AR-15. AR-15 is real good for home defense. Now, a lot of people have all kinds of things to say about this and of like, I do train people how to fight with guns for a living. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday teaching pistol 1, 2, and 3 classes. And so it's from a deep, deep wealth of experiential knowledge, training civilians how to fight with guns. And I teach all kinds of stuff. And I'll go into this on YouTube channels and on our streaming service, WPSN, where I'll have a whole lot of data and a whole lot of points many people haven't thought of. They just go into a gun shop, they hold something and say, I like the way that felt in my hand. And it happened to be in Tiffany blue. And so that's the one. And really, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm not as much a, you got to get this gun kind of thing. It's more the Indian and not the arrow. And so really it's just, I would like you to have some gun and you practice with it, you train with it, and you gain some level of competency with it. So I won't lord over the 12-gauge shotgun with flamethrower, though dudes listening in, it's pretty dope. It's pretty dope. I don't even know if this thing works yet. It probably doesn't work. But
there's a lot of great content on firearms and things on your channel. People who are interested in that, definitely get on the Warrior Poet Society YouTube. And then from there, you'll be able to find out, you know, everything John's got. Great guests on his show as well. Again, there's a link to his channel in the show notes. And there's also a link to buy the book, The Warrior Poet Way. Can you hold it up one more time?
I almost held up my flamethrower shotgun.
You can hold them both up there. First, we'll hold up the book, and then I got to see that flamethrower one more time.
That's very good. Oh, here we go.
There you go.
Right there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. 12-gauge 12 gauge shotgun with a flamethrower attachment. There you go. John Lovell, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.